This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama, not a dime's worth of difference. Washington, D.C., June 4th. 7,000 Zionists gather, representatives of the Israeli lobby, for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, better known as AIPAC, and should be the American-Israel Political Action Committee, because that is the function it serves. 300 senators and congressional representatives line up to pay obeisance at this meeting. Three presidential hopefuls show up, two of them becoming their respective party candidates, Barack Obama and John McCain. Today on Taking Aim, we are going to discuss Barack Obama and his foreign policy statements. Ralph?
No, I wanted to say that we're going to examine the extent to which Barack Obama is a conscious and very sophisticated instrument of U.S. imperialism, and that is part of the story. In our second part, Maya, we want to address the Wall Street economic determination of the politics of the Democratic Party in general and of Barack Obama in particular.
Let's look at the prepared remarks of Barack Obama at the AIPAC meeting. He started off, "I want you to know today I'll be speaking from my heart and as a true friend of Israel. And I know that when I visit with AIPAC, I am among friends, good friends, friends who share my strong commitment to make sure that the bond between the United States and Israel is unbreakable today, tomorrow, and forever." Among the people attending the 7,000 Zionists were 1,200 students, and Obama addressed them particularly. He said, "Nothing reflects the face of AIPAC more than the 1,200 students who have traveled here to make it clear to the world that the bond between Israel and the United States is rooted in more than our shared national interests. It's rooted in the shared values and shared stories of our people. And as president, I will work with you to ensure that this bond is strengthened." And what did he mean, referring to these Zionists as grassroots activists, linking them to his work in Chicago and what he considered his work as grassroots activism? He also then pointed to his own life story. Particularly, he said, "I learned about the horror of the Holocaust and the terrible urgency it brought to the journey home to Israel," a journey that he linked to his own life story, reflecting upon his great uncle, who had been part of the 89th Infantry Division, the first Americans to reach a Nazi concentration camp. You hear Obama linking his life to all the myths, the Zionist myths, and most importantly, he aligns himself with the Imperium instead of with the struggle of the Palestinian people, the struggle of the oppressed. He will represent imperial interests worldwide. Ralph?
Well, Maya, I think in particular with respect to his remarks at AIPAC and regarding Israel, what Barack Obama is doing here is celebrating the fiction, the mythology, the ideological rationale for imperialism globally and in specific regard to its new agenda of permanent war in the Arab East and the dismantling of each state in that region. This is, in fact, the entire function of the Zionist state from its inception. This is why the Israeli apparatus has been financed, armed, and created and sustained by imperialism. That is why it is so central to the intelligence operations of the United States, to the death squad operations from Africa to Latin America. That is why the Zionist apparatus commands such overwhelming support within the Imperium in the United States. Not because the Zionist apparatus in itself controls controls the $10 trillion status. Some would have it, which is a left cover for a form of suggesting that there is a good bourgeoisie that would do good things, nationally interested things, except that the Jews don't let them. This is a form of fiction that is sustained by a Stalinoid and liberal illusion of which Barack Obama is not an important component. But when we examine what Barack Obama did at the APEC gathering, what unfolds here is a clear delineation of what the Democratic Party, and indeed a wing of imperialism associated for the most part with Eastern capital, projects as the task forward.
Ralph, we must start with his comments about Israel, because that really shows his framework, his alignment with the Zionist myth. He says explicitly, quote, "We know that the establishment of Israel was just and necessary, rooted in centuries of struggle and decades of patient work. But 60 years later, we know that we cannot relent, we cannot yield, and as president, I will never compromise when it comes to Israel's security." Ralph?
Well, Maya, part of what he has done at this APEC gathering is to reiterate themes that Barack Obama and his array of ruling class advisors, from Anthony Lake to the Brzezinski brothers, to this whole security apparatus which has been associated with both the Republican and Democratic parties, what he has done here is to reiterate, as he says in his own words, this is a commitment that both John McCain and I share. Because support for Israel in this country goes beyond party. Part of our commitment in speaking up is to sustain Israel's security when it is at risk. And I don't think any of us will be satisfied that America's recent policy, foreign policy, has made Israel more secure. Hamas controls Gaza. Hezbollah has tightened its grip on southern Lebanon and is flexing its muscles in Beirut. And because of the conduct of the war in Iraq, Iran, which always posed the greatest threat to Israel, is emboldened and poses the greatest strategic challenge to the United States and Israel in the Middle East in a generation. Iraq is unstable. Al-Qaeda has stepped up its recruitment. Israel's quest for peace with its neighbors has stalled, despite the heavy burdens borne by the Israeli people. And America is isolated in the region, more isolated, reducing our strength and jeopardizing Israel's safety. That is the scenario and the rationale for shifting the focus on a multiple occupation, multiple 100,000 occupation of Iraq, which, as with Vietnam, is seen as unsustainable. The resistance is handing imperialism a strategic defeat, and so they are sounding the alarm and the necessity to sustain imperialism by expanding it beyond Iraq and by cutting back in Iraq to permit that. The question Obama states is how we move forward. He said, those who would lay all of the problems of the Middle East at the doorstep of Israel, as if the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is at the root of trouble in the region, are wrong. They blame the Middle East's only democracy for a region's extremism, and they offer a false promise that abandoning a stalwart ally is somehow the path to strength. It never has, it never was, and it never will be. Our alliance is based on shared interests. Those who threaten Israel threaten the United States. Israel has always faced these threats on the front lines, and I will bring to the White House an unshakable commitment to Israel's security, and that starts with ensuring Israel's qualitative military advantage. I will ensure that Israel can defend itself from any threat, from Gaza to Tehran. Defense cooperation between the United States and Israel is a model of success, but it must be deepened. As president, I will implement a memorandum of understanding that provides $30 billion to Israel, investments to Israel's security that will not be tied to any other nation. We must immediately approve the foreign aid request for 2009, and going forward, we will enhance our cooperation with Israel on missiles. We will export military equipment to our ally Israel. I will stand up for Israel's right to defend itself in the United Nations and around the world. And he continues, we must isolate Hamas until they renounce terrorism, recognize Israel's right to exist, abide by all past agreements. There is no room at a negotiating table for terrorist organizations. And that is why I opposed holding elections in 2006 if Hamas were on the ballot. The Israelis and the Palestinian Authority warned us against holding these elections, but the Bush administration pressed ahead. And the result is a Gaza controlled by Hamas, with rockets raining down on Israel. The Palestinian people must understand that progress will not come through false prophets of extremism or the corrupt use of foreign aid. The United States must stand by Palestinians who are committed to cracking down on terror. I urge Arab governments to take steps to normalize relations with Israel and to fulfill their responsibility against extremists and to provide support for President Abbas and Prime Minister Fayyad. Egypt has to cut off smuggling of weapons into Gaza. And he lays out an agenda of escalated military operations in the region, a total license for further operations by the Zionist apparatus with the full support of the American Imperium.
And Ralph, he accepts every false notion about the Zionist state. One, that it came out of centuries of struggle and it is a deserved homeland for Jews. Also, that it is the Middle East's only democracy. That's how he refers to the Zionist state. Middle East's only democracy, a country that is recognized even by the representative of imperialism, the United Nations, as an apartheid state. Middle East's only democracy. And this is significant because he recognizes Israel as a theocratic state, a state for the Jews. Over and over, he refers to a Jewish state of Israel. And most importantly, he talks about the undivided Jerusalem as a capital of the Jewish state. Ralph?
Maya, the articulation of the ideological rationale for Zionism is the linchpin of imperial policy now for very much since Franklin Roosevelt, since approximately 1940, when the American imperialism determined to displace British and French imperialism in the region, and Franklin Roosevelt informed Churchill that he would be taking on the responsibility, as he called it, for King Saud and for Saudi Arabia. The U.S. was displacing British and French imperialism. The Zionist state was its shock troop. So the issue here for Barack Obama's articulation of policy is he's not merely addressing AIPAC. He's not merely addressing the Zionist apparatus. He is, as he has been for the since his political career began, articulating for the ruling class its agenda and his capacity to give it a fresh face and a credibility which will buy it a little time. But when we examine what that entails, we see that, as with each democratic regime, it may oppose, for example, with regard to the Kennedy brothers in Indochina, massive 500,000 occupying troops that are losing a war. But its replacement for that is killer squads and Green Berets and Rangers and Phoenix programs and the strategic hamlets and the hunting down of death squad operations of those who defend the national interests, the economic interests, the social interests of the oppressed, who will be labeled as terrorists or communists or subversives or whatever, and targeted for extermination, nothing short of that. That is the agenda that the Democratic Party has persisted in adopting more efficiently and more explicitly and counterposed to the bogging down with deficit finance, massive troop occupations. They want counter-revolution on the cheap in an age of declining profits and a crisis of capital. To understand Barack Obama is to understand the murderous agenda of imperialism and its total subordination to the necessity of the ruling class to oppress our people at home and to expand the imperium abroad. This speech is an articulation of that agenda.
Ralph, again, let us go back to his words. His as he says, quote, any agreement with the Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, and defensible borders. Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided. Here, as I mentioned before, is his full acceptance of the Zionist project, because we know that defensible borders means imprisoning the Palestinians in mini Bantustans of which they have no control, except perhaps to determine when the garbage is collected and how they are policed at some level in cooperation with the Israeli security forces.
It does more than that, too, Maya, because what is Jerusalem as the capital of the Zionist state? First of all, East Jerusalem is, in fact, populated by the Palestinian population itself. But secondly, East Jerusalem and Jerusalem itself has been expanded virtually to Bethlehem and virtually to Hebron. The surrounding villages, the surrounding areas, including Abu Dis, are all now incorporated in Greater Jerusalem, characterized by the settlements, characterized by the security walls, characterized by the superhighways from which Palestinians are banned. It is a strategic hamlet modeled on Vietnam and applied to the Palestinian areas. And the real intent here is to disperse the Palestinian population through attrition, driving them out, suppressing them, and through attrition, reducing their numbers and establishing essentially absorption of the area within the Zionist apparatus.
And, Ralph, you cannot go from the north of the West Bank to the south of West Bank conveniently without passing through Jerusalem. So it, as you say, it not only expands the Zionist state and expands it to Jordan, in effect, to the banks of the Jordan River, it also divides the north and south part of the West Bank. And remember that the West Bank has been not only populated by settlements, there are closed military zones. But aside from the issue of Jerusalem, aside from the issue of preserving the identity of a Jewish state, Barack Obama accepts hook, line, and sinker all the falsehoods of the Zionist state as for its security threats.
Well, Maya, yes, please go ahead.
The threats to Israel start close to home, but they don't end there, meaning close to home, the Palestinians themselves. He says, Syria continues its support for terror and meddling in Lebanon, and Syria has taken dangerous steps in pursuit of weapons of mass destruction, which is why Israeli action was justified to end that threat. Referring to the Zionist bombing of a supposed nuclear facility in Syria. I also believe that the United States has a responsibility to support Israel's efforts to renew peace talks with the Syrians. We must never force Israel to the negotiating table, but neither should we ever block negotiations when Israel's leaders decide that they may serve Israeli interests. Ralph?
How does he define these negotiations? Success requires the full enforcement of Security Council Resolution 1701 in Lebanon. The false claim that Syria was responsible for the killing of Rafiq Hariri. And a stop to Syria's support for terror. It's time for this reckless behavior to come to an end, and there is no greater threat to Israel or to the peace and stability of the region than Iran. Now, this audience is made up of Republicans and Democrats, and the enemies of Israel should have no doubt. Regardless of party, Americans stand shoulder to shoulder in our commitment to Israel's security. The Iranian regime supports violent extremists. It challenges us across the region. It pursues a nuclear capability that will spark a dangerous arms race. It raises the prospect of a transfer of nuclear weapons and know-how to terrorists. Its president denies the Holocaust. He threatens to wipe Israel off the map. This danger from Iran is grave. It is real. My goal will be to eliminate this threat. No ambiguity about what Barack Obama means, what Barack Obama represents. what Barack Obama will implement with his criticisms of the number of troops in Iran. There's a private memorandum that has been exposed by Anthony Lake and other security advisors for Barack Obama. They will maintain up to 80,000 troops in Iraq and maintaining of forward bases in Iraq pursuant to the surrounding of Iran in Afghanistan and Pakistan and the strangling of Iran's economy with blockade with the military card ready to be played. That is the imperial agenda that Barack Obama articulates in this speech. Quote, "We knew in 2002 that Iran supported terrorism. We knew Iran had an illicit nuclear program. We knew Iran posed a grave threat to Israel. But instead of pursuing a strategy to address this threat, instead we invaded and occupied Iraq. When I opposed that war, I warned it would fan the flames of extremism in the Middle East. That's what happened in Iran. The hardliners tightened their grip. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was elected president, and the United States and Israel are less secure. Iran has strengthened its position. It is now enriching uranium. It has stockpiled 150 kilos of enriched uranium.
Low-enriched uranium.
Its support for terrorism and threats towards Israel have increased. These are facts. They cannot be denied, and I refuse to continue policies that makes the United States and Israel less secure. Keeping our troops tied down indefinitely in Iraq is not the way to weaken Iran. It is precisely what has strengthened it. It is not a plan for victory. I propose a phased redeployment of our troops from Iraq. We will get out as carefully as we were careless getting in, and we will use all elements of American power to pressure Iran. I will do everything in my power to prevent Iran from attaining nuclear weapons, and that starts with aggressive diplomacy without self-defeating preconditions, but with a clear understanding of our interests. We have no time to waste. We cannot and will not rule out an approach that will prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon." That's a clear signal, brothers and sisters, and I will come back to this. We will discuss his long-established threats to bomb Iran. "We have tried peaceful talks. It is time for the United States to lead with a careful preparation. Open up lines of communication, build the agenda, coordinate with our allies closely, and evaluate the potential. I have no interest in sitting down with adversaries for the sake of talking. As president, I will lead tough and principled diplomacy at a time and place of my choosing when it advances the interests of the United States." And he continues, Maya.
Ralph, recently the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Brown, came out with a statement that his policy will be for Britain to help build 1,000 nuclear power plants around the world, to take the leadership in the construction of nuclear power plants. We have in Iran the statements of the Iranian leadership, and this goes way back. The Iranian leadership has said that it is opposed to nuclear weapons and that they are building a nuclear power plant. If we look at Iran, Iran is the second largest exporter of oil in the OPEC nations, in the OPEC members, of the OPEC members. Yet, Iran does not have adequate refining capacity and is an importer of refined gasoline products. So the nuclear power plants in Iran have been to create electrical energy. They have said this all along, and they worked with the Russian leadership to build these nuclear power plants. We have the entire atomic oversight agency saying that there is no evidence of Iran constructing nuclear weapons, aside from the fact that Iran has every right to create its nuclear weapons. Israel itself, according to Jimmy Carter, has at least 150 nuclear warheads and probably more. This is even a statement by the former president of the United States, despite Israel's denials. So we have here falsehoods spread over and over again. And here we have Barack Obama, the Democratic Party candidate and the next president of the United States for all intents and purposes, according to what we see happening with polls. We have him supporting Iran as a terrorist country, a country that must be stopped at all costs.
Supporting the thesis, Maya.
Yes.
We will present a clear choice to Iran. Abandon your dangerous nuclear program and your support for terror and all threats to Israel, and there will be meaningful incentives, the lifting of sanctions, economic integration. And if you refuse, we will ratchet up the pressure. If Iran fails to change course when presented with this choice, it will be clear to the people of Iran and to the world that the Iranian regime is the author of its own isolation. That will strengthen our hand with Russia and China as we insist on stronger sanctions in the Security Council. And we will work with Europe, Japan, and the Gulf states to find every avenue to isolate the Iranian regime. Cutting off loan guarantees, expanding financial sanctions, banning the export of refined petroleum, boycotting all firms associated with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. So, indeed, you see the agenda. Starve them out, strangle their economy. A blockade is an act of war, brothers and sisters. A blockade has always been understood to be an act of war. This is an act of war. This is an agenda for war. This is the formula for dismantling a government, dismantling a regime, and indeed dismantling the country of Iran as they have done in Iraq and as they have long projected to do throughout the region. We will join with Israel, building on last year's U.S.-Israel Energy Cooperation Act to deepen our partnership to develop sources of energy and increasing scientific collaboration. The surest way to increase our leverage in the long term is to stop bankrolling this Iranian regime. But let there be no doubt, I will always keep the threat of military action on the table. We will defend our security and our ally Israel, and there may be no alternatives to confrontation. If we must use military force, we are more likely to succeed with far greater support at home if we have exhausted our diplomatic efforts. Do you see the charade? He says, as members of APEC, you have helped advance a bipartisan consensus to support and defend our ally Israel. Today on Capitol Hill, you will be meeting with members of Congress and spreading the word. We are here because of more than policy. We are here because the values we hold dear are deeply embedded in the story of Israel. This is Barack Obama's articulation of the relationship between Zionism and imperialism, and they are in lockstep. He says, we are like the lips to the teeth. This work includes a shared commitment. We know we must do more than stand still. Now is the time to be vigilant in facing down every foe as we move forward. Now is the time to stand by Israel as it writes the next chapter in its extraordinary journal. Now is the time to join together in this work of repairing this world. That is Barack Obama before APEC. That is the agenda of imperialism, and that is the formula for expanded war, for nonstop repression. The Bush era will look like a soft interregnum when this apparatus is in command.
From decades of struggle and the terrible wake of the Holocaust, a nation was forged to provide a home for Jews from all corners of the world, from Syria to Ethiopia to the Soviet Union. In the face of constant threats, Israel has triumph. In the face of constant peril, Israel has prospered. In a state of constant insecurity, Israel has maintained a vibrant and open discourse and a resilient commitment to the rule of law. These are the words of Barack Obama. These are the words that sustain the Zionist project. These are the words that sustain the relationship of Zionism and imperialism, with the Zionists as the shock troops in the Middle East for the imperialists. And remember also, it is the Zionists who collaborated with the apartheid state. It is the Zionists, the Mossad, that was sent into Central America to do the bidding of the American rulers in Central America. It is the Zionists that work hand in hand with the imperial project.
Indeed, it is the Zionist apparatus in the region, the functioning of the Israeli state, which articulates and develops the stratagem and the ideology of a war against terror. Israel is facing terrorism. Israel is engaged in a war against terror. American imperialism adopts the terror menace as the replacement for the subversive communist menace as the ideological rationale for a permanent occupation of other countries.
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama, not a dime's worth of difference. Ralph?
Maya, on June 15th, an important article was published in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Obama, McCain, aides agree. Israel and the U.S. must discuss strike on Iran. The Washington Institute's Task Force on U.S.-Israeli Relations recommends an elaborated strategic discussion. Senior advisors to the campaigns have endorsed this statement. The Washington Institute for Near East Policy has published the final version of a report by the Task Force on the Future of U.S.-Israel Relations. The title, How to Deepen U.S.-Israeli Cooperation on the Iranian Nuclear Challenge. No less appealing, says Shmuel Rosner, the Haaretz correspondent in this article, no less appealing is the list of people endorsing this report. Tony Lake and Susan Rice of the Obama campaign, Vin Weber and James Woolsey of the McCain camp. Now, brothers and sisters, Anthony Lake is one of the national security consultants and guides to both Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, of the Clinton regime. He is the point man, along with the Brzezinski brothers, for Barack Obama. As to Vin Weber and James Woolsey is one of the principal spokespersons for the Project for the New American Century. This is the neocon apparatus. These are the people who, with the Zionist apparatus and the Mossad, as we have so often documented, are the authors of the attacks on the World Trade Center in 2001, as they were on the World Trade Center in 1993. These people are engaged in what can only be called treason at the top. This is the ruling class, ruthless, relentless, ultimately deceptive. And here in this articulation by Haaretz, we see that Obama and McCain and their key national security aides are on the same page, working out the same agenda, elaborating the same strategy.
Ralph James Woolsey is the author of World War IV. We did an entire series about the premise of World War IV and also about taking out the Saudis and the expansion of the war in Iraq. I suggest people go to our Taking Aim website and refer back to that entire series some years ago about the thoughts, the premise, and the intended actions proposed by James Woolsey.
And in this article, and I think it's very important here that we understand that the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which authorizes Haaretz to articulate that the Obama and McCain security aides have agreed, Israel and the United States are going to now prepare a strike on Iran. Who are these people? Dennis Ross, former Middle East peace envoy, Rob Satlot, were the two who made this happen. But the list of endorsers includes the important people, Haaretz states, those close to the presidential campaign. They include former counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark, who is a critic of the Bush people from the perspective of a more sustainable imperial agenda. Bob Blackwell of the Council on Foreign Relations, former Senator Bob Kerry, and others. Now, these are the people, notably Senator Bob Kerry, of the 9/11 Commission, the entire defense of the official fiction about 9/11 and the assimilation of the attacks of September 11th to every single false flag operation of Israel and the United States of the previous decades. These people, the article in the Haaretz says, raised concerns regarding the depth and content of the U.S. strategic dialogue. They state the dialogue must be enhanced because of the challenge to Iran. Obama and McCain advisors agree, I'm quoting, U.S.-Israel will prepare preventive military action against Iran. Achieving peace between Israelis and Arabs while Iran is going nuclear is difficult. Our collective ability to wage peace or prevent conflict will be shaped by the success of stopping Iran's nuclear ambitions.
Ralph, we will discuss these reports in full on another Taking Aim show. It's important to note that the expression preventive military action is exactly the same notion as President Bush articulated in the beginning of his term as presidency, and this was that the U.S. has the right to go in and take military action before it is attacked.
Now, Maya, I want to end this article. We will detail, as you say, at a later time, but I think it's important to read the final paragraph of this important article. This is the document signed by the two most senior advisors to Barack Obama. Quote, the president will begin a national conversation with the American people on the challenges and risks posed to U.S. interests by the Iranian acquisition of a nuclear weapons capability and on the ways we need to prevent it. We are going to raise popular awareness of the fact that Iran's nuclear ambitions will trigger a surge of nuclear proliferation and raise the potential of terrorists gaining nuclear weapons, unquote. And the article in the Haaretz concludes, this is not saber-rattling. It is facing reality, quote, unquote. That is the reality, all right, brothers and sisters. Tighten your seatbelts. After Barack Obama, prepare for an ever-expanded war in the region.
Ralph, this is exactly what they are proposing. They are proposing setting up the American people for a strike against Iran. We've done programming about President Bush's intended strike against Iran. Should it not take place during the Bush administration, Obama's advisors are strongly suggesting that it should take place during his administration. Quote, the president should begin a national conversation with the American people on the challenges, risks, and dilemmas posed to the United States' interests by the potential Iranian acquisition of a nuclear weapons capability on ways to prevent it, to raise popular awareness of the fact that Iran's nuclear ambitions are likely to trigger a surge of nuclear proliferation, and they raise the potential of terrorists gaining nuclear weapons. As you've been saying, we have to reiterate, we have to state over and over again, both Ralph and I, these statements of the supporters, the advisors of Barack Obama, and the intention. And this was made clear in the Wall Street Journal with the publication of an opinion piece by Timothy Lynch and Robert Singh on June 2, 2008. Lynch and Singh are academics at the University of London and the authors of, quote, After Bush, The Case for Continuity in American Foreign Policy, published by Cambridge University Press in 2008. As Lynch and Singh write in the Wall Street Journal, none of the main candidates has disavowed the war on terror. Each has called Mr. Bush tactically deficient. But the debate over the war on terror is over how, where, and when. The candidates have all argued that they would do a better job of fighting it. And they go on to say, President Bush's purported obsession with Baghdad began in the hawkish stagecraft of Vice President Al Gore. In 1998, Bill Clinton made regime change official U.S. policy. And in 2003, Mr. Bush made it a reality. The last great liberal hope to win the White House, Bill Clinton, committed more troops to more parts of the globe than any president since World War II. Since the end of the Cold War, America has undertaken at least 9 military interventions overseas under 3 presidents of both parties in 2 distinct historical eras, pre and post 9/11. History suggests that the next great liberal hope, Mr. Obama or Mrs. Clinton, would probably continue the trend. Ralph?
Want more George W. Bush foreign policy? The Wall Street Journal article begins, elect John McCain or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Regardless of who wins in November, the current foreign policy will live on in the next White House. This is the Wall Street Journal on June 2nd, 2008. There is no more explicit and clarifying articulation of what is at stake here. The number of America's foes hasn't grown under the Bush administration. The actual number of our enemies can be counted. Cuba, Iran, North Korea, Syria, Venezuela. Now, what's interesting about that is that, as we will see in a major speech of Barack Obama, which spells this out in even more detail, Barack Obama, in his important speech, The War We Need to Win, which he gave in Washington on August 1st, 2007, talks about 100 countries in which they will hunt down the terrorists and kill them with increased capacity, which is the predicate of the drawdown in Iraq to expand the imperial apparatus to operations on an agenda that the Bush administration has not even imagined.
Ralph, we've discussed the war we need to win in prior shows, and we must return to it again today in light of his speech before AIPAC, because what we see here is that Barack Obama is repeating. He is maintaining this theme throughout his campaign, and these will be the themes of his presidency should he be elected the next president of the United States. And he states again and again, I did not oppose all wars. I was a strong supporter of the war in Afghanistan, but I said I would not support a dumb war, a rash war in Iraq. I worried about a U.S. occupation of undetermined length, at undetermined cost, with undetermined consequences in the heart of the Muslim war. I pleaded that we finish the fight with bin Laden and al-Qaeda. So it's important to note here, because over and again, he supports a stronger troop involvement in Afghanistan, and he supported a direct strike within Pakistan, no matter what the Pakistani government had to say about it. And that was the key issue of the war we need to win that you stressed over and again when we discussed this speech before. And as the Wall Street Journal opinion piece by Lynch and Singh had noted, as well as military officials, you know, the people in the army have noted, there is no way that there will be a troop displacement from Iraq. As the Wall Street Journal article states, a President Obama would risk too much with a precipitous withdrawal, especially if it was just to fulfill an early campaign pledge that was adopted more to establish blue water between him and Mrs. Clinton than to reformulate the war on terror. Mr. Obama's opposition to the Iraq war is empirical. It didn't work, rather than ideological. And what they note here is that he will not withdraw troops from Iraq. He cannot withdraw troops from Iraq. Ralph?
October 1st, 2004. Democratic keynote speaker Barack Obama calls for missile strikes on Iran. In an interview with the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune published September 26, 2004, Democratic Senate candidate Barack Obama said he will favor the use of missile strikes against Iran. The big question is going to be, he told the Tribune, if Iran is resistant to economic sanctions, which I hope will be imposed, at what point are we going to take military action? Realistically, as I watch this thing evolve, I will be surprised if Iran blinked at this point. He calls for preemptive missile strikes on August 3rd, 2007. Barack Obama calls for an attack on Pakistan. Speaking to the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, Obama called for more troops to Afghanistan and advocated, quote, unilateral attacks against Pakistan and pledged to strengthen the U.S. military and intelligence apparatus. This is a theme for which he has auditioned. Indeed, in his book, The Audacity of Hope, he has pledged to increase the war on terror and to use American military force wherever the United States sees an imminent threat. In the recent issue of Foreign Affairs, he states, we must use the moment to rebuild our military and to prepare it for the missions of the future. We must retain the capacity to swiftly defeat any threat to our country. We must become better prepared to put boots on the ground, to take on foes that fight asymmetrically and highly adaptive campaigns, and we will do this on a global scale. He urged immediately 65,000 soldiers and 27,000 Marines should be added to the standing military. This is Barack Obama. August 13th, 2007, brothers and sisters, hit Iran where it hurts. Barack Obama. This is on September 4th, 2007. Americans need to come together and confront the challenge posed by Iran. The Bush administration are blocking a bill that will ratchet up the pressure on the Iranian regime. It's time for this obstructionism to stop. He's outflanking Bush from the right. The decision to wage a misguided war in Iraq has substantially strengthened Iran. It poses the greatest strategic challenge to U.S. interests in the Middle East in a generation. Iran supports violent groups, sectarian policies in Iraq, fuels terror and extremists across the Middle East and the world. It continues to make progress on its nuclear program in defiance of international community, and Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has declared that Israel must be wiped off the map. He says they have to be stopped. Barack Obama, no ambiguity, brothers and sisters. And indeed, Lieberman, when he joined the GOP in criticizing Obama's APEC speech, as articulated by Carl Hulse in the New York Times on June 4, 2008, Democrats did not expect Joseph I. Lieberman, the independent and former Democratic vice president nominee, to endorse Barack Obama, but he is a close ally of Senator John McCain, but they did not anticipate he would join a Republican criticizing Obama's stance on Iran. Well, brothers and sisters, Obama confronted Lieberman on McCain's advocacy by reminding him that they had articulated the identical policy. When Senator Lieberman called for U.S. military attacks on Iran on June 13, 2007, he was reiterating the identical call made by Barack Obama. And indeed, Lieberman's statement amidst heightening tensions between the U.S. and Iran, according to an article in the Financial Times, reflect growing anger and frustration in the administration and the U.S. military. And indeed, that should prepare us to understand what is the real relationship between Barack Obama and Joseph Lieberman. Here is the Boston Globe on March 31st, 2006. Barack Obama rallies state Democrats, throw support behind Lieberman. Lieberman, who was, in fact, the mentor, quote-unquote, U.S. Senator Barack Obama rallied Connecticut Democrats to throw their support behind his mentor and Senate colleague Joe Lieberman. Obama wasted little time getting to the point, calling it an elephant in the room, praising Lieberman's intellect, character, and qualifications. The elephant in the room was Lieberman's tolerance of the Bush administration, but the fact of the matter is that I'm going to go ahead and say it. We must support him. I am absolutely certain Connecticut is going to have the good sense to send Joe Lieberman back to the Senate so he will continue to serve on our behalf. You see the underlying politics, brothers and sisters. This is a charade. All wings of the class have a consensus about the Imperium. All wings of the class are preparing for military adventures beyond those which we have seen today.
Barack Obama has stated his support for the Zionist state over and again. He has stated his support for the imperialist project throughout the Middle East. Still, this is not enough. As was stated clearly in a piece by Edvard Luttwak, Miles Ignotis, a Defense Intelligence Agency representative, of whom you've written about over and again in Iraq and Kuwait in another article.
Because it's Miles Ignotis or Edvard Luttwak, what he talks about is we need a boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped. And it may not translate the same in English as it does in Arabic. This was the formula for a staged false flag operation like 9/11 for the attacks on Iraq and the region.
On May 12, 2008, as an op-ed contributor to the New York Times, he published an article that I'm surprised even the New York Times would print. President apostate? He questions. Barack Obama has emerged as a classic example of charismatic leadership, a figure upon whom others project their hopes and desires. The resulting emotional intensity adds greatly to the more conventional strengths of the well-organized Obama campaign, and it has certainly sufficed to overcome the formidable initial advantage of Senator Hillary Clinton. One danger of such charisma, however, is that it can evoke unrealistic hopes of what a candidate could actually accomplish in office, regardless of his own personal abilities. Case in point is the oft-made claim that an Obama presidency would be welcomed by the Muslim world. And here he goes on to state essentially a setup for the assassination of Barack Obama. Of course, as most Americans understand it, Senator Obama is not a Muslim. He chose to become a Christian and indeed has written convincingly to explain how he arrived at his choice and how important his Christian faith is to him. His conversion, however, was a crime in Muslim eyes. It is iridad or rida, usually translated from the Arabic as apostasy, but with connotations of rebellion and treason. Indeed, it is the worst of all crimes that a Muslim can commit, worse than murder. With few exceptions, the jurists of all Sunni and Shiite schools prescribe execution of all adults who leave the faith not under duress. The recommended punishment is beheading at the hands of a cleric, although in recent years there have been both stonings and hangings. Do you understand what Edvard Luttwak is saying here?
He says explicitly, Maya, that Barack Obama will be assassinated as an apostate, that it is a religious obligation of all Muslims, that there's no question that because his father had been a Muslim and he has renounced his Islam, he is, by religious edict, required to be killed. This is an elaborated articulation of the inevitability of such a course, and what this is, by having Edvard Luttwak of the Defense Intelligence Agency, who we can associate with assassinations of the past, and that's another story, signaling a twofer. What is a twofer? You killed the head of state, as was done with John F. Kennedy. You impute it to demonic others, in the case of Lee Harvey Oswald, a fidelista, a defector to the Soviet Union, in fact a CIA operative, as we have articulated long and clearly about the dynamics of the Kennedy execution. A twofer is you kill the head of state, which is a standard procedure for ruling class politics, and now you have the rationale for a massive repression at home on the scale that George Bush and Dick Cheney have been preparing and articulating and the whole wing of the class embraces. That's what this present apostate represents by Edvard Luttwak in the New York Times. This is a playing out of this internecine conflict between wings of capital over the spoils of the imperium. It is a ruthless murder apparatus, and as Malcolm said, you cannot have death squads roaming the planet and think they will stop short at your national frontiers. The chickens have come home to roost. They have been roosting, and they have more than roosted. They, in fact, define late capitalism in our era, brothers and sisters. Maya?
Ralph, it is time to close this program, and next week we will discuss in more detail the policy statements by the Washington Institute, the Washington Center on the Middle East, the Zionist section here in the United States, the think tank, and the impending attacks on Iran. Ralph?
Well, I would like to remind our listeners of an important speech that Barack Obama made that was reported by the Associated Press on March 31st. Senator Barack Obama said he will return the United States to the foreign policy of past presidents, George H.W. Bush, John F. Kennedy, and Ronald Reagan. He praised George H.W. Bush for the Persian Gulf War and carefully defined objectives. The truth is that my foreign policy is a return to the realistic policy of George Bush's father on John F. Kennedy and of Ronald Reagan. What do you need, brothers and sisters, to perceive the realities of this two-party system that is, in fact, one big property party with two names, committed to permanent war and repression and sustaining a capitalism that is in terminal decay? Next week, we will elaborate further on the agenda as it applies to Latin America and, above all, to the repression at home that will follow upon the crisis of capital, fictive capital, that we have been discussing in previous programs of Taking Aim.
This has been Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Barack Obama, Not a Dime's Worth of Difference, will be available on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. Please contact us at takingaim@patbell, that's P-A-C-B-E-L-L.net. We'll be with you next week.